Quite by chance, a few years ago now, on a Good Friday evening, I stumbled into the antic world of Jay Leno's version of The Tonight Show. I was looking for a change of pace after a week spent awash in biblical narrative. Ready, even desperate for something else, I turned on the television. What I found, however, was more of the same, more Bible. But this time, my encounter with Scripture was not in the solemn context of the Holy Week Passion Journey, but rather in the reality sideshow of popular culture. Leno was jaywalking, a recurrent feature on his version of The Tonight Show, where he took to the streets and, microphone in hand, asked questions of passersby. And it turns out that every year come Easter, when the media in general turn, if only momentarily, to Christianity, Leno administered a Bible quiz on the unwitting souls who saw a camera and hoped for their 15 minutes of fame. Infamy is more like it, because the man or woman in the street, or at least those who made it into the final cut, flunked Jay's test big time. Where was Jesus born? Somewhere in Iraq. What was the crown made of that he wore at his crucifixion? Flowers. Who will inherit the earth? The rich. What two biblical cities did God destroy on account of their evil? Pompeii and Atlantis. Cast your what upon the waters? Life raft. While the regular passers-by on the streets of LA are not quite biblical scholars, so what about biblical scholars? The story is told that famous 20th and 21st century theologians and scholars Karl Barth, Paul Tillich, Reinhold Niebuhr, and James Cone find themselves all at the same time at Caesarea Philippi. Who should come along but Jesus? And he asks the four famous theologians the same Christological question that we hear Jesus ask the disciples in this morning's gospel passage. Who do you say that I am? Karl Barth stood up and said, "You are the totaliter aliter, the vestigious trinitatum, who speaks to us in the modality of Christ monism." Not prepared for Barth's brevity, Paul Tillich stumbles out, "You are he who heals our ambiguities and overcomes the split of angst and existential estrangement. You are he who speaks of the theonomous viewpoint of the analogia entis, the analogy of our being and the ground of all possibilities." Reinhold Niebuhr gives a cough for effect and says in one breath, "You are the impossible possibility who brings to us, the children of light and the children of darkness, the overwhelming oughtness in the midst of our fraught condition of estrangement and brokenness, on the congruity and existential anxieties of our ontological relationships." And finally, dear James Cone gets up and raises his voice, "You are my oppressed one, my soul's shalom. The one who was, who is, and who shall be, who has never left us alone in the struggle, the event of liberation in the lives of the oppressed struggling for freedom, and whose blackness is both literal and symbolic." And Jesus writes in the sand, "Say again?" And so humanity has struggled with just who Jesus is and what his life means for a couple thousand of years now. And some have turned away in frustration, confusion, doubt, disinterest, you name it. It isn't easy, this coming to Jesus, is it? Look at Jesus' closest inner circle of disciples. They struggle too. Rod Broding, an Elka pastor, writes, "When Jesus began to speak openly with them about what was to come, they were unable to accept his words, let alone form their own. They probably were stunned. Suffering? Rejection? And be killed? No way. This simply could not be, they must have reasoned. There must be some mistake. We must have heard or understood incorrectly. The concept of a Messiah did not include suffering, rejection, and murder. Nothing could be more foreign to their understanding of the Messiah who was to come and rescue a besieged people of God. So in disbelief, Peter, speaking for the rest of the disciples, pulled Jesus aside and began to reprimand him. For 3 years, these disciples had witnessed miracle upon miracle. They had seen Jesus give sight to the blind and hearing to the deaf. They had witnessed the exorcism of demons, the forgiveness of sins, the calming of the sea, the raising of the dead. They had observed the compassion of this man, even when he was utterly exhausted. They had seen Jesus expose the hypocrisy of the Pharisees and cure the lepers. Surely this man was the one of whom the prophets spoke. But suffering, rejection, killed? No way. Perhaps some doubt crept into their thinking at this point. Have we followed the wrong one? Have we left our homes and our families and our jobs to follow someone that isn't what we thought? The degree of Peter's protest demonstrates how Jesus' teaching about his mission and his fate represented a new way of thinking. A new radical direction in the way of Jesus was being formed. A new vision of discipleship was required. We all understand how ambiguous messages can be misunderstood. But when someone speaks openly and directly as Jesus did here, there's little room for misunderstanding. The problem is that despite their relationship with Jesus, the disciples did not understand what Jesus was really about. Somehow they missed the point. And Brodin continues, of course the disciples had a preconception of what a Messiah should be. The scriptures they had heard from their childhood told them of one who would be God's chosen one, one in whom God delighted. This one would bring forth justice and blot out their sins. This one would open the eyes of the blind and redeem the lost. Had they not witnessed all of this in Jesus? Of course they had. The disciples could repeat the prophecies of Isaiah and others by heart. Is not this the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of injustice? To undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house, when you see the naked to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own kin, says Isaiah? Yes, the disciples would say to one another, we have seen these things take place. But did they miss the prophecies of Isaiah and others who spoke of one who would be despised and rejected? The one who would be oppressed and afflicted? One who would be wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities? A man of suffering and acquainted with grief? Did they miss that the Messiah would enter Jerusalem humble and riding on a donkey? The disciples' concept of Jesus' identity and mission was much like the crowd that followed Jesus. Despite the clarity with which Jesus spoke, they just didn't get it. What do you think the atmosphere in that room was like as Jesus began to expound on what the future would hold? I imagine Peter's face must have paled. His composure evaporated. Peter must have felt like a pebble instead of a rock. Peter's response caused a response in Jesus that must have cut deeply into the disciples. Get behind me, Satan. For you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things. From there, Jesus lays it on the line quite openly about what it takes to be one of his disciples. Those who want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. It's a three-point plan. Deny yourselves, take up your cross, follow me. Unlike the disciples, the elders understood and they fumed. The priests understood and they spit on the ground. The scribes understood and they shouted blasphemy. They grasped his call and they knew his mission. And the truth of Jesus' words was so threatening to the religious and political powers of that time that they decided to kill him. And that is just what they did. Fulfilling what the prophets had forecast, they looted his clothes, mocked his name, and crucified him. This has always left us to decide just as the disciples and the crowds had to decide. Jesus asks us, "Who do you say that I am?" And the answer is not some quick quip to make headlines, nor is it some thick theological jargon that makes no sense to the average person of faith or seeker of wisdom. The answer and what happens next is up to you and up to me. Who is Jesus to you? It's a question that ultimately comes from the heart of every single one of us who seek him. Responding to the question is the beginning of a journey, affecting who we are and what we do with our lives and who we say that we are. Particularly as a people of faith who follow Jesus and the way of the cross. And what about the way of the cross on this 2 days after Holy Cross Day? Is there anyone among us who believes in the way of the cross anymore? Jesus called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake and the sake of the gospel will save it." What does that mean to you today? In order to even hear these words, we have made the cross into a symbol, and we have robbed it of its power. Does it offend you anymore? This cruel and inhuman cross of torture and death? What if I dragged in among us an electric chair, a hangman's noose, a table with straps and an IV pole, a lynching tree and rope? These would jar us, at least I hope they would, to think of humanity's ugly, evil inhumanity to one another. The cross was such an object of cruelty. It was offensive. The cross is about torture and pain and loss and rejection and death and sacrifice. Peter's part in the story in Mark's gospel makes us look again at the ways we have domesticated the cross and made it much less about injustice and death and more about Jesus' triumph, often foregoing the passion and leaping to the empty cross. The reality is that Jesus did not conquer the earthly enemies of the people and the ways of the world, and even in the ways the disciples expected. Instead, he suffered rejection, torturous pain, and was killed before he ever rose again. And it is in that suffering that we encounter the depth of God's love for us, for all of us. It's there that we see that every life matters and requires justice, mercy, and love. And that we are called to suffer, to bring into being this justice, whatever the cost. It was and it is not only the powers and principalities who find it challenging to accept the way of Jesus, the way of the cross. It is more significantly Jesus' own followers then and now who continue to misunderstand. Like Peter, we struggle to find our way into living the way of Jesus. Who do you say that Jesus is? Who do you say that you are as a follower of Jesus? Who are we together? The answers unfold when we collide with Jesus and his call to discipleship in a way that leaves us no choice but to embrace the questions and look inward and find there the living, loving God. No choice but to make a commitment to the one who changes our lives forever and who through us, through our own crosses that we pick up and carry, change the lives of the whole world. Amen.